Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Laetrile when we come back. You know, when you have an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed and paying their advertised 15.3% rate. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance? Instead of paying 17% of the $50,000 twice. But you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of that $50,000 in Social Security tax once. Then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in the income tax twice. That means you pay 17% of that $7,650 two times. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everybody else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that's just real special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. And tax and status, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been reviewing Laetrile. If you want to do a research project on Laetrile, you punch in Laetrile in any search engine and you'll come up with a ton of material. But there's an outfit here called www.laetrile.com. That's spelled L-A-E-T-R-I-L-E. That's the way you spell Laetrile, L-A-E-T-R-I-L-E.com. And they've got a ton of material. We pulled off, I don't know, probably 10 articles here. I haven't got the time, I don't think, here to cover every article or cover all of this book and do real justice to it, but we'll do the best we can. The objective here is to show you that there's 14 cures to cancer. Laetrile is probably the best. It is probably the most significant because it identifies the cause of cancer. It's a vitamin B17 deficiency. In the same way that you have a deficiency disease, they give you a vitamin or mineral. You know, if you got scurvy, they give you vitamin C. If you got rickets, they give you vitamin something else, D, I think it is. And so on down the line. And so you get symptoms. There's 450 symptoms out here that we get, and this is called the physician's desk reference. And this, every doctor has this desk reference on his desk. And so you come in there and you say, well, I've got this, this, and this is wrong with me. He looks that up, and that combination of symptoms. And then he looks it up and says, oh, my God, you've got Parkinson's disease. And then it makes you feel real good because they've got a label for your symptoms. They got a copyrighted trademark. And this is why it's illegal for you to go out and give a cancer cure or something like that. See, cancer is a copyrighted trademark of the American Medical Association. I mean, they own it. It's as illegal for you to go out and cure somebody of cancer as it would be for you to go out and make a gallon of Coca-Cola. You've got to be licensed. That's why medical doctors are licensed. That's why there's a protocol that you have to go through in order to cure cancer. And so you need to be, you got to go to college. You got to get a license. You have to be a licensed, bonded, and insured. You've got to go out in the marketplace and follow the protocols, just like you do with Coca-Cola. I mean, you can't go out here and just make Coke and call it Coca-Cola and go out here and sell it. Now, you can make Gordon Cola or Joe's Cola or Tom's Cola, but you can't make Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, or Royal Crown Cola. Those are copyrighted trade names that belong to businesses, and they're protected. And that's all they're doing here is protecting the trade name here of cancer, and they're selling it constantly. Katie Couric is on the air selling cancer, you know, two or three, four times a week. And so is Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson. You know, they're all on there telling you about the latest cancer research and cancer this and cancer that. That's an infomercial. Infomercial. And then they have their actual commercials. I mean, they're out here selling you this or that or something else, and they're telling you to go to your doctor and have him check this out. Well, this Dr. Richardson over here, he got whacked. He got crosswise of the American Medical Association, American Cancer Society, Food and Drug Administration. He's out here curing cancer with Laetril. It is an approved protocol, and so therefore it's like making Coca-Cola in your bathtub and then going out here and selling Coca-Cola, but you're not licensed. In this case, he's licensed, but he's not following the protocol. He's not following the recipe. So you got to follow the recipe. You can't just go out here and start making up Coca-Cola, you know, and calling it Coca-Cola without following their express recipe. Just like Pizza Hut, you know, if you go to a Pizza Hut in Kansas, you're going to get exactly the same pizza that you do in Los Angeles. And that's because they've got a menu. They have a protocol. They have set standards. And Pizza Hut pizza in Wichita, Kansas tastes exactly the same as it does in Los Angeles, California, and Seattle, Washington, and New York City. It's because they use the exact same ingredients. They cook it at exactly the same temperature. Well, all of these doctors that deal with cancer do the same thing. And there's a protocol that goes along with it. And what this guy's doing, he's getting crosswise of the protocol. He says, I can turn out a better pizza. I can turn out a more flavorful Coke. Well, that may be true. But you can't do that because, you see, this is somebody else's bailiwick. This is somebody else's business. You can't go out here and open a store, call it Pizza Hut, and turn out a better Pizza Hut pizza. They're not going to sit still for that. They're going to put you in jail. So, if you thought that it's absurd that we can't cure cancer, the reason you can't cure cancer is because it's a copyrighted trade name, it belongs to somebody else. So butt out of their business. Now, the Bible calls it the botch of Egypt. So you can cure the botch of Egypt, that's a generic name, but then see, nobody knows what the hell the botch of Egypt is, do they? So if I came to my neighbor across the road and said, Kathy, what you have is the botch of Egypt. Now I've got a cure for that. She'd have looked at me like, you know, Gordon, you're suffering from the terminal stupids here. We don't want to dink around with the botch of Egypt. I've got cancer. Well, I went to the doctor over here and he told me I've got cancer. I got biopsies. I've got papers. I got documents. Prove it. Boy, I've got cancer. Oh, okay. That's like saying, well, I've got Coca-Cola. Well, okay, well, then you're going to have to use it within the guidelines of the Coca-Cola bottling company. How's that? Now, there's some Laetril case histories around the world, and with few exceptions, all of the cases that we saw were advanced, incurable cancer patients. Now, as Dr. Richardson says, when a guy came into my office, after the word had spread, you know, this guy's curing cancer, that people would come in there, they had incurable cancer patients. And this is what happens when your doctor, my wife went through this. She said it's an awful gut-wrenching experience when the doctor says, you have cancer. Your test is back from the laboratory, and I'm sorry to tell you that it's cancer. See, she told me, she says, oh my God. And then he doesn't say anything. The doctor doesn't say another word. The closing question in a sale is, I got the lab report back, and I'm sorry to report to you, Jackie, it's cancer. He doesn't say anything. And he lets this sink in. And then my wife said, is there anything we can do for it? And he says, no, I'm sorry, it's inoperable. I'm afraid it's terminal. And my wife said she cried. It was such a shock to her. This is back in 1978. And she said, well, surely there must be something we can do. And then the doctor says, well, yes, there's surgery, there's radiation, there's chemotherapy, and we can probably extend your life for 18 months, maybe 2 years, maybe if we're lucky, even three. What's that going to cost? About $100,000. This is back in 78, when $100,000 was a pile of money. $100,000 to extend your life for maybe 18 months. How long do I have? He said 3 to 6 months. If you do nothing, it's 3 to 6 months. If you do something, it's 18 years, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. See, in sales, we ask what's called the closing question. And in sales, we have five tools that we use to sell this product to you. Now, what a doctor is doing, he's selling you cancer. He's in the cancer selling business. He's an oncologist. His business is to sell you the treatment for cancer. He owns cancer. He owns this trademark. I own Coca-Cola. Now my job is to sell you a gallon of the stuff. I own Pizza Hut. I own the pizza. I own Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now my job is to sell you a tub of chicken. And so there's a modality that we use as salesmen to do this, and it's called vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And everybody is motivated to buy based upon their vanity, their jealousy, their lust, their greed, or their fear. Now, in almost all medicine and insurance, for instance, is sold by fear. Fear. We terrorize you into believing that you're going to die. And this is why in the first chapter, he entitled it, You Are Going to Die. That's the first thing. That's the first thing that we're going to tell you. You are going to die. Okay. The day you were born, boys and girls, you were going to die. Now mull that one over. The day you were born. Your Creator told you very plainly, dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. You're going to die. Now he said, meanwhile, I'm going to give you 70 years. Now if you follow my instructions, do what I tell you, eat the foods I recommend, you'll live for 70 years. And you'll live to be 80 if you're strong. Now I know there's some vegetarians out there like Dr. Wallach and a few others that say, oh no, you're designed to live for 140. It is true that there are some people that have lived to be 120. I think that's the current record. 122 or something like that. In the Guinness Book of Records, you know, you look up these super long. That's not average. The average is about 75. And that's exactly what God told you. 3 score and 10 and 4 score if you're strong. And that's about 70 to 80. And 75 is right in the middle. And 75 is the lifespan. Over in Japan, they're up to 80. And you can live to be about 80 years old, you know, if you follow these instructions. Now, most people don't follow these instructions. Now, there are some people accidentally living in the world, like the Hunzas I showed you the other day, the Eskimos, on their native diet, not their new modern diet from Walmart, and the Seventh-day Adventists. These people are strange people. They eat different than the rest of us. And because of that, they get more of this Laetrile or B17, so they live longer. They not only live longer, but they don't get cancer at all. They all die. All the Hunzas die. Every Adventist that I've ever heard of, including my Aunt Bessie, she died. Aunt Bessie, God love her. She finally died. She was an old lady. She was 88 years old or 85 or something like that. I forgot exactly, but, you know, she finally kicked off. All right, now, our objective here is to live as long as we can, and we want to live without pain and suffering and anguish. This cancer over here, they tell me, the people that I've talked to that had it said, God, it hurts. It is painful. It's terrible. Now, every single one of them told me that. And I can't think of anybody that's ever said, hey, this cancer really feels good. It's like having sex down at Plo's Whorehouse. You're going to love it. Not one person has reported to me that they felt good having cancer. So I started off in program 1 and I said, it would be better if we could avoid cancer altogether. and there's a way to avoid it. And there are people in the world that do avoid it. They don't get it. And it's because they have a high concentration of this B17 vitamin called Laetril or amygdalin, whatever name you want to hang on it, in their diets. So you can do what you want. I try to eat foods that are rich in vitamin B17, and there's a lot of nuts. Let me tell you what some of these foods are, just for funsies. In fruits, the blackberry, domestic blackberry, it's low. But in the wild blackberries, it's very high. So down here in my valley, I have wild blackberries, about 2 acres of them, and every year I go down and pick about, I don't know, 5, 6, 8, 10 gallons of blackberries and freeze them, put them in the freezer, and we eat blackberries here. All right, the boysenberries, choke cherries, wild crab apples. I have a crab apple tree out here. And they're not much of a fruit, you know. You take a look at a nice apple over there in the Kroger store and compare it to a crab apple. It's a little thing that's, you know, it's just about the size of a golf ball, maybe. And they're kind of sour. And they don't taste all that good. Well, anyway, they're high in B17, crab apples. Then there's market cranberry, Swedish lignon, cranberry, currant, elderberry, gooseberry, huckleberry, loganberry, mulberry, and quince. Now, I've got several mulberry trees in my yard. And every spring in May, I go out, and sometimes my wife and I, we play Adam and Eve, and we just get up in the morning and we go out under the mulberry tree and have breakfast, just picking mulberries off the tree. All right, now that's the berries. Now there are seeds like apple seeds, apricot seeds, buckwheat, cherry seed, flax, millet, nectarine seed, peach seed, pear seed, plum seed, prune seed, squash seed. So there's different qualifications here. Some are high, some are low, some are medium. Like squash seed is medium. So we eat quite a bit of squash here. Squash is easy to grow, and it's not the squash, it's the seeds in the squash that have the B17 in it. Then in the beans, there's black beans, black-eyed peas, fava beans, garbanzo beans, green peas, kidney beans, lentils, lima beans, and lima Burma beans, mung beans, and shell beans. And they have a range that goes from low to high, low, medium, and high. And so these are just some of the foods. This isn't all of them by any stretch of the imagination, but these are some of those that have the highest concentrations. Then strawberries and raspberries, they're good. Sprouts, you can get alfalfa, bamboo, fava, garbanzo, and mung bean sprouts. Nuts, all raw. The word is all raw in brackets. Bitter almond is high. Cashew is low. Macadamia is high. Now, I eat a lot of cashew nuts. I like them. It's low, but it has B17 in them. And leaves, such as alfalfa. Now, alfalfa leaves are high in B17. So when you drink raw milk, and that's what I do, I feed my cows alfalfa hay, and then here in the wintertime, and then I drink the milk off of the cow. This is what the Eskimo is doing. So he's eating the meat off of the reindeer, which is eating the tundra. And so he's getting a high concentration of B17. The tubers, such as the cassava, sweet potatoes, and yams. So if you like cassava, now evidently this cassava must be something like sweet potatoes and yams, is my guess, because it's called a tuber. I don't think I've ever eaten a cassava. I see the name here, and I've heard the name. I can't ever remember eating one. But I eat sweet potatoes and yams. They're low in B17, but, you know, a little bit's better than nothing. Eucalyptus. Now, I don't believe I eat any eucalyptus at all, although I have bought eucalyptus honey. So my guess is that the eucalyptus honey may have a high concentration of B17 in it. Spinach is low. Watercress is low. Beet tops are low. Now, when it's high, it's above 500 milligrams of nitrilicide per 100 grams of food. Medium is above 100 milligrams per 100 grams of food. And low is below 100 milligrams per 100 grams of food. Vitamin B17 is one of the main sources of food in cultures such as the Eskimos and the Hunzas. Did you know that within the tribes, there has never been a reported case of cancer? That's according to Dr. Krebs. We need a minimum 100 milligrams of vitamin B17, the equivalent of about, it says SC, apricot seeds. Let's see, kernels or seeds of fruit. The highest concentration of B17 is found in nature, aside from bitter almonds, is apricot, cherry, nectarine, peach, pear, plum, and prune. Now, it's not the pits themselves. You got to break these pits open, and then in the inside of them, there's a little soft kernel in there. Bitter as all get up. Well, it says SE here. I think it's a mistyping over here. How many apricot seeds do you need to nearly guarantee a cancer-free life? Foods that contain vitamin B17 are as follows. The kernels are seeds of fruit, beans, nuts, berries, seeds, grasses, grains. And in the miscellaneous section over here, bamboo shoots. They're pretty tasty. I like those. Fuchsia plant, sorghum, wild hydrangea, yew tree, needles, fresh leaves. Bamboo shoots I can take. Sorghum I can take. The rest of it, I don't know. Grains like oat, groats, barley, brown rice, buckwheat groats, chia, flax, millet, rye, vetch, and wheat berries. Grasses such as acacia, alfalfa, sprouted. So, you know, a few people like sprouted seeds, like alfalfa, mung bean. Milkweed is high, Sudan, minas, wheatgrass, and white Dover. Now, you see this wheatgrass? A lady by the name of Ann Wigmore pioneered this wheatgrass, and what they did, they put it in boxes. In fact, you can go into the health food store over in Reno, Nevada. Oftentimes, I go into the Wild Something health food store. And they got a juice bar in there. And you can get carrot juice or whatever kind of juice you want. And then if you want, you can have them put a little wheatgrass in there. So they take wheatgrass with scissors and they just cut it off. Wheatgrass is just wheat sprouted and about 6 inches high. And they just cut it off, run it through a juicer over there. And that wheatgrass is very high in vitamin B17. Well, Ann Wigmore ran a clinic, and that's what she put you on. She took you off meat, put you on wheatgrass. Every day she gave you wheatgrass and cured cancer. I don't know if she knew that that was vitamin B17. I can't tell you that, but she had a hell of a successful business and cured many people of it. Now listen to some of the results that we get from this. And by the way, you can get this from www.leatril.com. And if you don't have a computer, then why don't you just call your son or daughter or some kid or somebody in the neighborhood and just write this down. I don't, whether you got a computer or not, write this down. It's www.leatril, spelled leatrile.com. Now there's a bunch of other stuff that comes after that, but if they go to that website, they can find it. And you're looking for Leatril vitamin B17, foods containing B17, give you the list. It's right there. It's what I did. For instance, I did not know that bamboo shoots were high in B17, but now I do. Hell, you're as smart as I am now. Now watch this. The summary of observations contained in a report of September 1st, 1976, with very few exceptions. All of the cases that we saw were advanced incurable cancer patients. Most of them had conventional therapy before being treated with Leatril. The most striking observable feature was relief of pain accompanied by a decrease or even cessation of the need for painkillers and sleeping potions. It is interesting to note that in the majority of cases, the patients came off long-term use of narcotics without the usual withdrawal symptoms. After a few days of treatment with Leatril, There was an improvement in appetite, followed in many cases by weight gain. And a frequent striking feature in cancer wards is the odor of decaying cancer tissue. We observed that this fetor, the smell, is generally absent in the cases of patients under Laetrile therapy. Laetrile is non-toxic to normal somatic cells and may be given by injection in doses of up to 5 grams per kilogram of patient weight per day. Now, that's a god-awful bunch. Now, take a look here at the amount that you get in your food and your diet. It's 500 mg or milligrams or micrograms. I'm not quite sure if it's micro or milli, but whatever it is, and 500 mg. Now, that's high, but this is 5 grams, not, you know, 500 thousandths of a gram. This is 5 grams. That's 10 times as much. 10 times as much. And they inject it per kilogram of body weight. I mean, hell, you know, if you weigh 200 pounds, that's about 100 kilos, and you could get 5 grams per kilo. I mean, you know, you can take this stuff by grams and grams and grams, by the ounce, and it's non-toxic. You know, so the hype that they give you that's full of cyanide and that you ought not to take it because it's going to kill you is preposterous poppycock. Now, the God that created us, you know, was no dummy. He's a pretty smart guy. And then to figure this out, you know, took some brains. We haven't figured it out yet, but the guy that did figure it out was our creator, and he's got this thing scoped out. You need this B17 or you're going to get cancer, or there's a high likelihood of it. Now, most people, you know, except for McDonald's, you know, you can think about it here for a minute, you probably don't get very much Laetrile out of McDonald's, but, you know, if you eat any of these berries, or you eat any of these seeds, or you eat any of these beans, you know, most people eat beans once in a while, don't they? Don't you ever go to the Taco Bell and have refried beans, or the Mexican restaurant and eat refried beans, you know, with your dinner? Well, those refried beans, you know, they've got Laetrile in them. So, Laetrile is a non-toxic to normal somatic cells and may be given by injection in doses of up to 5 grams per kilogram of patient weight per day. That's a god-awful heavy dose. In short, it is our conclusion that, contrary to many allegations in both the scientific and lay literature, Laetrile is not quackery. Laetrile is non-toxic even in very large doses, and Laetrile has a definite palliative effect. We cannot at this stage of our investigation say that it inhibits tumors, but the evidence we have suggests that it does. We must do controlled studies to rule out the possibility that prior therapies had some effect on the tumors that stopped growing. However, we doubt that the regressions we observed were due to the delayed effects of other therapies, because in our experience, such delayed effects rarely, if ever, occur. There will be more to say presently on the subject of delayed effects of orthodox therapies. But for now, let us keep to the main subject, which is the allegations that there are no or is no evidence to support claims on behalf of Laetrile. As I hope you're beginning to see, the evidence is in fact abundant. For instance, the regions of the world where native diet is high in nitrilicides are exactly the same regions where the people are noted for their good health, longevity, and freedom from cancer. Here in the United States, there's a well-defined group of Laetrile advocates who consistently reinforce their daily diet with vitamin B17 supplements. And while their fellow citizens now are suffering from cancer at the rate of 1 out of every 4, not one of these people has ever been known to contract this disease. All of this has been present and documented by Griffin in World Without Cancer, the story of B17, and the facts are well established in the scientific literature. I have that book here, by the way. One of these days I'll probably review that, World Without Cancer. It's written by G. What's his name? G. something Griffin. I think he's the same Griffin that wrote Jekyll Island, Federal Reserve book. Be my guess. G. Edward Griffin, I believe his name is. When finally confronted with some of the evidence that Laetrile is effective, the critics can be counted on to fall back to the next line of defense and complain that the evidence is invalid because there's been no control group to verify, that the results are not produced by psychological factors called the placebo effect, or as mentioned in the Israeli report, by the delayed reaction of previously administered orthodox therapies. The thought that we should have conducted double-blind studies is appalling. First of all, those of us who have been using Laetrile have been treating human beings, not guinea pigs, and it would be unconscionable to give half of my patients an injection of saline solution or, for that matter, to prescribe radiology or toxic chemotherapy. In my mind, I would know that I was not giving the first group the metabolic therapy that they need to prolong and save their lives, and the second group I would be condemning to disfigurement, untold suffering, and almost certain death. Only those who have no faith in Laetrile could entertain the idea of a control group. But after all, that's the way that game is played. You give it to one group of people, and you don't give it to the other group of people. You sit back and watch and see what happens. All right, we're at the halfway point. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. I might mention here while I'm thinking about it, I'm going to put this over here on this pile. There's a thing here called grapeseed. Now, this grapeseed's a little pricey. But grapeseed oil has great benefits. Grapeseeds derive their medicinal effects from compounds called, oh my God, proanthocyanidins. Let me try that one. Proanthocyanidins, I guess. which are generally extracted from the grape seed and added to commercial preparations. Grape seed procyanidins, cyanidins, are a type of flavonoids of the flavin 3-1 class. The class of flavonoids includes catechin, epichichin, which can be found in other plants including cocoa, apples, cranberries, blueberries, and pine bark. These proanthocyanidins have demonstrated antioxidant activity and are believed to play a role in the stabilization of collagen and the maintenance of elastin II critical proteins in connective tissue that support organs, joints, blood vessels, and muscle. Results from a number of studies indicate that grapeseed may be useful in relieving a number of conditions, including vision difficulty, chronic venous insufficiency, whatever venous is, lymphedema, varicose veins, cancer, premenstrual syndrome, dental cavities, and a variety of circulatory disorders. Grapeseed has been used in connection with chronic venous insufficiency caused by damaged valves in the veins carrying blood to the heart. I guess that's venous. V-E-N-O-U-S, veins, evidently your veins, such as varicose veins, spider veins, and severe blood clotting, and may also help keep your veins and other blood vessels from leaking. This blood vessel strengthening effect of grape seed extract may help to prevent and relieve hemorrhoids as well. Since it strengthens the walls of all blood vessels, grape seed extract may also be effective for slowing retinopathy, that is, the gradual breakdown of the retinas in your eyes. Individuals with arterial sclerosis, that's a buildup of fat deposits in the arteries. I thought that was atherosclerosis, was the buildup of fat deposits in your arteries, and arterial sclerosis was the hardening of the arteries. I might have that backwards, or else this article does, one or the other. It's either arterial sclerosis or atherosclerosis. Diabetes or other conditions that increase the likelihood of damage to the small blood vessels in your eyes are more likely to have serious vision problems as a result of that damage. Grape seed extract may reduce eye stress caused by bright eyes, and in studies of laboratory animals, it's been shown some possible effectiveness in preventing cataract formation, but further research is required to determine whether this effect may pertain to humans. Now, especially noteworthy are the results of one study where a number of women with chronic venous insufficiency experienced reduced symptoms after supplementing with 150 milligrams of grape seed extract per day. I wanted to point out here that this grape seed, you can get it in your local health food store. We got a bunch of it here on the farm. I didn't make it myself now. I happened to pick it up down at Tim and Jim's. But this grape seed oil, you know, after they make wine, they've got all these grape seeds. So they take the grape seeds by the ton, they grind them up, and then they make grape seed oil. Now, I noticed that this grape seed is, the oil is pretty pricey stuff. But the reason I wanted to throw that in here while I was talking about Laetrile is that it has so many benefits in addition to being a good source of this vitamin B17. It also has all of these other neat little things that go along with it, which just demonstrates that the Creator, you know, assuming that you didn't evolve from green slime and that you are the product of a superior intelligence, he actually thought this thing out, and it works pretty well. All right. Besides, do not all of the patients now dying in our nation's cancer wards constitute a sufficient control group? I gladly will put up our modest case histories against any similar number of orthodox cases, and I believe the comparison will speak for itself. As for the placebo effect, the possibility that patients are merely psyching themselves up and responding to a kind of faith healing, One can only say that, of course, we have no mesmeric powers. In fact, we go out of our way to explain to our patients that if the cancer is far advanced, or if there has been extensive damage done by prior radiation or chemotherapy, the chances for their recovery is slim. I want to point that out again. There are cases where people have had chemotherapy or they've had radiation. And in those cases, you're given B17, and then they watch you, and then they watch you die. And it's because your immune system is actually what is using this B17, distributing it around in your body, and it's your immune system that cures you of the cancer. And in fact, it's your immune system that cures you from all disease. And the radiation and the chemotherapy destroys your immune system. Or it will so impair it that you can't recover. So I just wanted to warn you ahead of time, if you think that, well, I'll do the conventional treatment first, and if that doesn't work, then I will go to the nature path and we'll try this vitamin B17. Why don't you do this? Why don't you concentrate on the B17 before you get cancer and see if you can prevent cancer like the Hunzas, the Hopi Indians and the Navajo Indians and the Eskimos and so on, Seventh-day Adventists. I mean, hell, if you just adopted a Seventh-day Adventist diet, and because they don't eat meat, or because a lot of them don't, they get their protein from nuts, so they eat a lot of nuts. And because they eat a lot of nuts, they're getting a lot of B17. Which would explain why it is that Seventh-day Adventists don't get as much in the way of cancer. Now, this one guy points out, talking about Adventists, that not all Adventists are vegetarians. That's number one. Not all Adventists eat a good diet. Some Adventists, you know, eat Krispy Kremes and wash it down with Coca-Cola like all the rest of us. And if that's the case, then they're probably going to have about the same health results that the rest of us have. Now, let's take a look here at some case histories. Over here at the end of the book, he's got a section in here called case history. And he goes through cancer of the alimentary tract and major digestive glands. And the case histories include the stomach, colon, rectum, anus, liver, and pancreas. The death rate of patients with cancer of the colon, rectum, and anus who chose or choose orthodox therapy and who do not use Laetril is second only to cancer of the lung. More than 98 out of every 100 patients who have cancer of the pancreas and choose orthodox therapy will be dead in 5 years. More than 99 out of every 100 patients with cancer of the liver are dead five years following orthodox treatment. The following case history should be read with these facts in mind. Okay? And so he divides these up. He's got lung cancer. He's got, you know, all kinds of skin cancers and so on. Let me flip back here to the beginning of lung cancer. He says, if patients with cancer of the lung accept only orthodox therapy, 80% will be dead within 1 year. 95% will be dead within 5 years. And the following case history should be viewed against this background. Now, he's got a case number here, and I'm going to start here with cancer of the lung, and I'm going to circle this one here. And he's got this number, this case number L118L, metastatic cancer of the left lung and pleura, and probable cancer of the liver. This woman was 65 years old when her symptoms first appeared in July of 1975, and she had left shoulder pain and pain on the left side of her chest. Chest x-rays were normal. Alkaline phosphatase or TASE was slightly elevated. In August of 1975, she returned to her doctor again because of increased left-sided chest pain and pain in her left breast. A chest x-ray was normal. The dorsal spine x-ray taken in left lateral position showed pleural fluid. This confirmed the diagnosis of left subpulmonic effusion, the escape of fluid into an area below the lung. On September 15, 1975, the patient was hospitalized because of almost constant left-sided chest pain. Admission also showed a nodule on her thyroid. Blood test revealed a change from the same test 6 weeks earlier. Significant findings were hemoglobin 11.2, and I go through a bunch of garbage here. And then on September 19, 1975, the subpulmonic pleural effusion was tapped and the fluid removed. The fluid contained protein 4.5 grams per liter, serum albumin, and the cytology on the fluid was reported as being consistent with well-differentiated palpatory, adenocarcinoma, and in brackets they put cancer. You know, they could just tell us plumbers she had cancer, and we'd believe you. But, you know, they're doctors, and so they have to use these big words to confuse us little guys down here at the bottom. Now, the impression. Now, here's the moral of the story. This lady, now, she goes through the conventional route. This is what all of us do. I mean, you know, when you get sick, you know, you're going to go to the doctor. The doctor's going to look at you, and for the first time or two, he's going to say, well, everything looks pretty normal. Everything looks pretty normal. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. Until finally, this thing is drug on for so long. Take a look at the time lapse here. Talk about speedy cure for cancer. Here's this lady. She comes in July of 1975. By September 19th of 75, this is July, August, September. So 3 months later, they finally admit her to the hospital and take a look at her and say, hey, you got cancer. Well, then they lost 3 months of valuable time, didn't they? That's normal. I mean, when you go to the doctor, he doesn't sit there and say, well, I think you've got cancer, so let's put you in the hospital and prove it. He takes a look at the x-ray and says, I don't see anything here. Now, the patient was hospitalized again from November 3rd through November 7th of 1975, and the admission history states in part that it was decided during the previous admission the likely primary site was either the pancreas or perhaps bowel or lung, and it was elected to treat her with weekly injections of 5-FU, whatever that is. After four treatments, there was noted some chest discomfort, and x-rays taken about 10 days ago showed a significant increase in left pleural effusion with small loculated areas of something that I can't pronounce, and she was easily fatigued. She has had shortness of breath and has noticed an increase in abdominal girth. Evidently, her stomach's getting big. Because of the treatment failure and an attempt again to locate the primary, she's being admitted for a pleural biopsy and instillation of nitrogen mustard into the pleural cavity. On admission, the patient's liver was palpable on deep inspiration, 2-finger breaths below the right costal margin. Pathology report of the pleural biopsy was negative. On November 3rd, 75, however, despite the negative biopsy, 11 milligrams of nitrogen mustard was instilled into the pleural space because of the previous finding of cancer cells in the pleural fluid. Liver biopsy was negative, but the patient was presumed to have cancer of the liver based on the blood study findings. Discharge diagnosis was cancer of the lung involving the left pleura and possibly the liver, probable metastatic something or other, possibly something else. This doctor considered her to have inoperable cancer of the lung and probably cancer of the liver. She states that she received weekly infusion of 5-FU 800 milligrams of IV at approximately 10-day intervals from November 14, 1975 through January 14, 1976. And the patient stated, "My doctor said that I had about a year to live. Knowing that chemotherapy was not a cure, I decided to try Laetril, feeling hopefully that it would help me." The patient stopped taking the 5-FU on January 14, 1976, and began a program of metabolic therapy, including Laetril, on February 3, 1976. Cancer of the lung patients have an overall survival time of 6 to 9 months. This does not mean you get cured. It means that when you get lung cancer, you're going to live 6 to 9 months. This includes those who can have their tumor successfully removed. Chemotherapy is not considered to cure cancer, only to palliate it. Nitrogen mustard has been shown to increase the median survival of patients with lung cancer at best by only 2.5 months. Non-operable cancer of the liver patients are usually dead in 6 months. All right, so just pausing here, take a look at what we've read so far. This woman here has non-operable cancer. She comes into the Dr. Richardson here in January of 1976. He starts treatment February 3rd of 1976 with Laetril. Now, ordinarily, on average, she's going to live 6 to 9 months. Her doctor said, well, you've got about a year to live. 6 to 9 months, I guess, is about a year. That way she should surely be dead by 1 year. And I suppose once in a while, maybe one of them actually lives 15 months. Now, the patient was readmitted to the hospital in March of 76. One month after beginning metabolic therapy with Laetril, her complaint was severe pain in her abdomen. The diagnosis was impacted bowels, and the patient states at that time there was found no enlargement of the tumor and no fluid. The doctor wasn't very pleased with me taking vitamin therapy, but was pleased with my condition. Now, this is a common reaction, particularly among family doctors who may have known and cared for the patient for a number of years. They cannot give vitamin therapy any credit because their teachers keep insisting that it doesn't work. So they respond that they do not approve of what the patient is doing, but they are pleased with their progress. This patient's symptoms began in July of 75. Diagnosis was made in September of 75. Chemotherapy was terminated in January of 76. Metabolic therapy was begun in February of 76. The patient has responded beautifully and continues with no pain. She's in good health. If she were the average lung cancer patient, she would have been dead well before the end of 76. Only 20% of lung cancer patients survive 1 year. And that supposedly is the group on which, or on whom, surgical removal of the tumor was successful. We were unable to locate survival figures for the patients with more serious inoperable lung cancer, as was the case with this patient, but presumably the statistics would be even more unfavorable. All right, now this lady, we don't know how long she lived. She was much improved, and then there's no more follow-up. Now, there's a section here in the book toward the end called the appendix, and they take cases like H150S, and then you go back here to the appendix, and you look at H150S, which was bone cancer and metastasized to the spine. 6-year-old boy with advanced osteosarcoma of the upper right arm with metastasis to the spine. Child was given 6 months to live. Began metabolic therapy on November 29, 1973. Apparent recovery as of 1977. Mother was contacted in 2005 and confirmed that the patient has remained symptom-free for 32 years. All right, now here's a kid that was given 6 months to live. Bone cancer. Let's go back here. Cancer of the bone. It's called an osteosarcoma, right humerus, cancer of the right upper arm bone with metastasis. This little boy was 6 years old when his symptoms began. He had been a normal, active youngster and then over a short period of time became listless and complained of pain in his thighs and arm. The patient, or the parents rather, went to the child's pediatrician. In July of 73, they were referred to a bone specialist. The orthopedist felt there was nothing to be concerned about and, according to the parents, advised them to go ahead with a planned vacation. Apparently, no diagnostic x-rays were taken. The child became so weak during the vacation that he had to see Disneyland from a wheelchair. Upon returning to their northern Nevada home, the parents sought a physical therapist because the boy could no longer stand straight or run. In October of 73, a new symptom presented itself. Little Shane, who was right-handed, began trying to use his left hand. The mother describes watching him at dinner one night and asking him why he was eating left-handed. His response was to look at her with a helpless, puzzled expression, which indicated he just did not know how to explain his problem. He could do no more than shrug his shoulders. And then, using his left hand, he raised his right arm and rested it on the table. His mother asked him to stand up and show her how high he could raise his right arm. Her heart sank. He could raise it only from the elbow, not from the shoulder. In the light of the earlier reassurance from an orthopedic doctor that nothing was wrong, she stated that she was terribly confused. On November 6th of 73, the parents again sought the help of a physical therapist. Here are people that are going to doctors, and the doctors are telling them, hey, there's no problem, kid. Go on your vacation. Go to Disneyland. Have a good time. And so, as time progresses along, it is determined that this kid has inoperable bone cancer. And it has metastasized. It has spread over his body. His kid's 6 years old. Here's one of those cases, again, where time is of the essence. You know, if you're going to treat cancer, months and months and months goes by from the time you go to your doctor to the time they finally come to the conclusion you've got cancer. They tell you, we've got to find it early. But they don't find it early. It goes on and on and on and on. Finally, when you're so damn sick you can't function anymore, they say, oh, well, I guess maybe we better do some more tests. Then they come back and say, oh my God, you've got inoperable cancer. Fortunately for this kid, they gave him Laetrile, which was his only problem to start with. He had a vitamin B17 deficiency. That's the kid's problem. And it developed into cancer. And had they stayed with conventional cancer therapy, the kid would have been dead back in 1976. Instead, they gave him B17, and the kid recovered from it, just like if the kid had had scurvy, they would have given him vitamin C. Now, the doctors all recognize that vitamin C and scurvy go together. And that's because there's no money in scurvy. So we don't mind treating scurvy with vitamin C. But there is so much money in cancer that we are opposed to using vitamin therapy for cancer because it's so effective and it works so well. Like every time. All right. I'm out of time again, boys and girls. We'll take a look at these case histories next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing. of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.